Good morning, colleagues. Let's welcome all of you today, Tuesday, 2nd August 2022. I want to welcome all of you honorable members of this committee here at M46 and all of those and virtual platform. I want to acknowledge and welcome the public protector, as well as the legal team of the public protector. I'm aware today, as indicated yesterday, that that team will be led by Advocate Tshabalala. And I want to also acknowledge and welcome the evidence leaders, Advocate Bauer and Advocate Mayosi. Welcome members of the media joining us, the entire support staff of this committee. Last but always special, to welcome and thank members of the public who have started this inquiry with us, are with us every day. As South Africans watching this in your various platforms, 408, YouTube, you're welcome. Feel as if you are in this room as well. Thank you, colleagues. I'm not referring to the witness yet because I will be led by Advocate Bauer there before the witness is introduced. Advocate Bauer, as she's busy, just to indicate the following before she takes the platform. The timelines for today will be as follows. Evidence leaders are going to lead evidence from 10 up to 12. And from 12 up to 3, it's going to be the team of the public protector. Thereafter, members are going to interact. Those are today's timelines. I repeat, the evidence leaders will start from 10 to 12, and from 12 to 3, it is only with the team of the public protector. Thereafter, members are going to interact with the witness. Those are our today's timelines. I now want to recognize Advocate Bauer.
Good morning. We're calling the witness today is Mr. Vusi Sunnyboy Mashlangu.
Thank you. Vusi Mashlangu, but I now go to recognize Mr. Jenkins, who's standing in place of Ms. Fatima Ibrahim to do the important part of introducing the witness to this inquiry. Mr. Jenkins, can you hear us?
I can hear you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning. Good morning for the other honorable members, Public Protector and her team, Bofu and my colleagues and all other members there. Good morning. I can hear you, Chairperson. Should I continue?
Yes, today the public protector team is led by Advocate Tshabalala. You now can proceed.
Yes, good morning, Advocate Tshabalala. Thank you, Chairperson. I want to greet the witness, Mr. Mashlangu. Good morning, Mr. Mashlangu.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. For the record, could you please state your full name?
And you can keep your mic on, Mr. Mashlangu.
Thanks, Chair. I'm Vusi Sunnyboy Mashlangu.
Thank you, Mr. Mashlangu. Mr. Mashlangu, I've been asked to administer the oath before you commence with your testimony. So I'd just like to read it to you. And at the end, I will ask you to either, with an oath or affirmation, I don't know which you prefer, an oath or affirmation just to seal the deal, if I can call it that.
earning.
Okay, fine. So, Mr. Mahlangu, you've been invited subject to the provisions of Section 60 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act of 2004 to appear before this committee as a witness and to answer questions in respect of the committee's inquiry into the removal of the public protector advocate Makwebane. So, Mr. Mahlangu, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. It's very important to note the following, please. You are, however, protected in that the evidence given under oath or affirmation before this committee or before the House may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. We understand that, Mr. Mahlangu.
Yes.
Thank you. So please be aware of the following as well. In terms of Section 17, Subsection 2 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act, a person who willfully furnishes the House or a committee with information or makes a statement before it which is false or misleading commits an offence and is liable to a fine or to imprisonment or a period for a period not exceeding 2 years. Do you understand that, Mr. Mahlangu?
Yes.
Thank you. So now you are required to take the oath or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is truthful. You did not indicate any preference, so if you do not mind, then please indicate if you do mind, I will use the oath. So I'm going to read it to you and just affirm it afterwards, please, that you agree. So, Mr. Mahlangu, you swear that the evidence that you will give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. Please raise your hand and affirm that, please.
Yes.
Thank you very much. So the oath has been administered, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mr. Mahlangu. You prepared an affidavit, you deposed to an affidavit, and you were assisted by the evidence leaders in the preparation of that affidavit.
Yes.
Can you explain the interaction that you had with the evidence leaders leading up to this inquiry? And I'm specifically dealing it with reference to paragraph 3 of your affidavit so that you can follow as I ask the questions.
Okay, thanks. Chair, as stated in my affidavit, paragraph 3, I was contacted by the two evidence leaders, and then they informed me of this committee and what it's doing. And they provided me with the information, like status here, more than 10,000 pages. I sift through the documentation. Obviously, I focus on some that are more relevant to what I've been doing when I was still at the public protector South Africa. And then we started compiling the affidavit, and they assisted me thereof.
Yes. Mr. Mahlangu, at the time you were informed that your name had come up and you were specifically mentioned in relation to charge 4, and for that reason it was important that we were able to meet with you in order that you could put your version before the committee. Did that accord with your recollection?
Yes. Like I said, there was a lot of information. But I decided to focus mainly where my name is being mentioned so that I can clarify the misconceptions that prevail there and also the misrepresentations that I pick up in those documents. Hence, I wrote my own version of the affidavit.
And in fact, when you met with us, you made it quite clear that you had not had an opportunity to read the entire 10,000 pages. Plus, correct?
Yeah, it was so difficult that one can go through the entire documentation. That is why I was very selective in my reading.
And in paragraph 4, you explain your motivation in being prepared to make the affidavit. Correct?
Yes.
And can you just tell the committee what that was?
It's basically that there was so much that was said about me when I was an accounting officer, so it became important that I come and clarify to this committee those issues that were raised about me.
And although you had no desire to want to come and give evidence before parliamentary committee, you provided the affidavit and you indicated that if you were called, you would come to do so, correct?
Yes, I was always flexible. The intention was not to come, but I made it clear to the evidence leaders that if they need to be, I am flexible to come and serve here.
Mr. Mashango, maybe if we took the general proposition and then work into the specifics as that is the format of your affidavit, it would be easier.
Yeah.
You point out in paragraph 5 what your answer is to the allegation that has been made against you. Can you maybe tell the committee what that is?
The main allegation was basically me intimidating the staff, harassing or victimizing them when I was the CEO. So that's the main issue that needs to be clarified.
Just a pause at that, Bauer. Honorable Gondwin.
Through you, Chair, can I ask Mr. Mashango to speak into his microphone because it's actually tilted.
All right, just bring it closer to you, almost about close to kissing it, but not kissing it.
Okay, Chair, then
yes, now we can hear you. Thank you.
Okay.
And what is your view in relation to the allegation? What is your position?
Well, maybe as we go along the affidavit, I'll be able to state my case. You see, the intention here is to deal with each and every one of the allegations one by one so that I don't generalize, but I can demonstrate to the committee how things transpired and how things were handled, especially on the disciplinary matters.
Well, I'm going to take you there, but in paragraph 5, you at the outset state that you deny having intimidated, harassed, or victimized any staff members whilst you're in the employee of the CEO. So I just wanted to get the general proposition out of the way before we come to the specifics.
Well, I deny it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you also make it very clear up front that prior to your employment at the TBSA, did you know Advocate Mkabane at all?
Not at all.
Now, in dealing with it, we set out in the affidavit, we first deal with your background. And what I realized last night was not in your affidavit, which would be useful for the committee, is to just give them an idea of your qualifications.
Okay. I'm a graduate of I have a degree in public administration and an honors in public administration, as well as an honors in political science. I have acquired a number of certificates, lately being the pre-entry SMS program for public service. Yeah.
You, prior to your employment at the Public Protector's Office, you were the Deputy Director General Land Reform in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, correct?
True. Okay.
And you answered initially to two ministers. Who were they?
Excuse me?
You initially answered to two ministers. During your...
Yes, I reported basically during my tenure, I think it was Minister Ngwana, and then later it became Minister Nkwindi.
Right. And during the course of your employment, you faced disciplinary charges.
Yes.
Correct? And those disciplinary charges is attached to your affidavit at page 2729.
Yes.
Right. Can you just take the committee through those charges? There were five charges.
2729, okay, I'll give that.
And then 2729.
Yes.
And then maybe just briefly explain the context of the charges.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Advocate Bauer. Sorry, Mr. Matlang. Just before we proceed, but I just want to make sure I got this right. You said you are reporting to two ministers. Were you an ADG or a DGG?
No, I think the question was about during your tenure, who was the ministers there. So the first minister was...
No, then I get it. Otherwise, yes. You were not reporting.
No, I was not reporting.
Well, that would have been the DG doing that.
Yes.
Thank you, Advocate Bauer.
Yes.
My apologies. I think I phrased the question clumsily. Sorry.
Yes. Okay. 2729 is the attachment that has a VSM1. It talks about the allegations of misconduct and notice to attend disciplinary hearing in terms of Chapter 7 of the Senior Management Service Handbook. Is there, I think, a number of charges. The first one is that Mr. Matlang was a Deputy Director, General Land Reform, and was being employed by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, and therefore an officer of the Public Service of South Africa and a member of the Senior Management SMS, are hereby charged with misconduct in terms of Chapter 7 of the SMS handbook for the acts of misconduct as set out in this charge sheet. You are hereby given notice to attend a disciplinary hearing in terms of clauses 271 of Disciplinary Code Chapter 7 SMS. Then the second one.
I don't think we need you to read it through.
Oh, okay.
Let me then rather just lead you through the charges.
Okay.
Yeah. Effectively, you were charged with six charges of misconduct.
Yes.
Well, six charges, right?
Yes.
And this related to land that was acquired at the McKinley, known as the PLAS project.
Yes.
And can you just briefly tell us what that was?
Just a brief background, I won't be long. Land reform has got three components. You've got the famous redistribution, and then you have the tenure security, and then you have the restitution, where normally families will claim their ancestral land. The PLAS, which is a proactive land acquisition strategy, was a main program within the redistribution. Why is it PLAS? Because the department took a decision that we shall proactively acquire the land and warehouse it, which means that there doesn't need to have an applicant for that land. But if we come across a land that is for sale, we'll buy it, put it there, identify beneficiaries, and place them later. So this was a main, this back and play became one of the projects whereby we bought, and then we warehoused, and later we allocated to beneficiaries.
Right. And the allegations emanated in 2011 relating to the identification, selection, appointment, and approval of the beneficiaries selected for the McKinley PLAS project, correct?
Yes.
And so charges one, charges two, charges three, four, and five related to the issue of the beneficiaries and the acquisition and instructions on the relating to the land, correct?
Yes.
And then charge six, related to an that you were charged with misconduct in that you unlawfully caused funds budgeted for other projects in the national office to be allocated to the acquisition of the Brandtree Pass project.
Yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
You were found guilty of charges 1 to 5.
Yes.
And not charge 6.
Yes.
And what was the rationale behind
the thinking that you were not guilty under charge 6?
Charge 6 basically speaks to the violation of the PFMA. As the Deputy Director General and Reform, I had all the delegations to shift the funds around. For instance, if I can make an example, let's say a particular province is still behind in finalizing the paperwork to acquire the land, and one province is ready. Towards the end of the financial year, we'll take stock to say who's ready so that we don't do the underspending. Then I will shift funds where I know that the province will be able to acquire. So they find out that that particular charge is not applicable because I had those delegations, and this was part of the strategy of avoiding underspending and compromising service delivery.
Okay, and so if you go to 273C, you would dismiss pursuant to these disciplinary proceedings.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then if we go to... So the essence, Mr. Ashangu, is that you were not found guilty of corruption, or you were not found guilty of any misappropriation of funds.
Yes.
That's the essence of,
yes,
of not having been found guilty on charge 6 and only,
yes,
on the first 5 charges. Right?
Yes.
You then instituted review proceedings,
yes,
in the Labour Court. Correct?
Yes.
And these proceedings were instituted on 12
April
2018. Yes. And were they opposed?
Yes, they were opposed.
There was then a spat about whether the review had lapsed and whether the application should be reinstated, correct?
Yes.
There's a judgment which is attached to your papers at 2734. And that's the judgment of the court which reinstates the review application.
Yes.
And the matter is still pending.
Yes.
Right. Now, you then applied for the job as CEO at the PPSA in 2018, correct?
Yes.
Right. And you responded to an advertisement to do so.
Yes.
Mr. Mshwanga, I had a copy of that advertisement and I shared it with you last night, and between me and you, I could not find it by the time I got home. So I don't know if I meant to ask you this morning, but it's neither here nor there. Right. If we go to page 2744 of your affidavits. Right. This is, although it's not identified on the document, I've double-checked, it's an excerpt of section 61 of the Public Service Regulation in Government Notice Regulation 877 of 2016. And can you explain to us, Mr. Mashlangu, what this reflects?
Okay. Chair, the schedule in 2744 is basically outlining or is the classification of the acts of misconduct that you will typically find in the public service, and what it means to the prohibition of being reappointed in the public service once you have been dismissed. And it's your middle box talk about the acts of misconduct. For instance, the first one, it will say the offering or recipient of any undue gratification or the facilitation of such offending or receipt of, then it tells you the period of prohibition before you can be reconsidered in the public service. The first one will be 5 years, and then you've got A, B, C up until D, and then you've got the second one that talks about sexual harassment. Then there be unfair discrimination that will give the number of years for prohibition, 4 years, and then you move to the next one, that is 3 years, and then the last one, which is 1 year. So if you go back to the charges relate to misconduct, not any of the first three, which is a receive of gratification, committing theft or fraud, conducting business, blah, blah, blah. And then it basically talks about contravention of any provisions of regulations 11 to 14 of chapter 2 of these regulations other than misconduct referred to in terms of 1 to 3, which means literally I was prohibited. So I can rejoin any government institution.
And in essence, by the time you applied for the position at the PPSA, that year had elapsed.
Yes, right. I was now eligible.
So you were appointed at this, you had an interview, who conducted that interview?
The interview, it was current public protector, the chairperson of the Public Service Commission, the deputy public protector, advocate Kevin Malunga, and the secretary, I think it was the HR head of the Public Service
Association. Was it the Public Service Commission or the Public Servants Association?
Public Service Commission.
Okay. Right. And you were then appointed for a period of 3 months.
Yes.
Pursuant to an appointment letter.
Yes.
And okay, after that 3 months, and why was it that you were only appointed for 3 months period?
I think it was their standard way of doing things to say you shall be under probation. I think it was their 3 months to 6 months before the public protector makes a decision about the full-time employment.
Okay. And if you see page 1452, which may be in the documentation provided to you, but it will be flagged on the screen. 1452.
Where do you find it? It
would be bundle F. Give me a sec.
Okay, I've got it.
It will be...
Yes.
The next one is 61. Right. Okay. So even though your fixed term contract said 3 months,
yes,
a performance agreement is concluded between yourself and the public protector for 1 year from 1 May 2018 to 31 March 2019.
The rationale around that was that your performance agreement must always be aligned to a financial year, because it's a statutory requirement in terms of the PPSA. So whether there will be an extension or not, but at least the performance agreement to talk to the financial aid.
Okay. And then after the period of 3 months, your position was then extended, correct?
Yes.
And if you go to 1458,
yes, and then
the extension was then from 1 August 2018 to 31 July 2019.
Yes,
correct?
Mm-hmm.
And if we just look at that for a moment,
okay.
And we'll flag it and we'll come back to it,
mm-hmm.
is a condition that is contained in paragraph 2 of your employment contract.
Yes.
And it states that the offer of appointment is subject to you obtaining the top secret security clearance from the State Security Agency. And should your dismissal from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform be confirmed by the Labor Court, the contract shall terminate on the date of the court order unless the employer decides otherwise after having studied the judgment.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your employment in the first fixed-term contract, did it have the same condition?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you look at paragraph 3, they ask you for a confirmation that there's no representation that you would be employed beyond the termination date in paragraph 3 on the part of the employer.
Yes.
Fine. And then if you go further on, and effectively you're the accounting officer, correct?
Yes.
Right. If you go further on in paragraph 9.2 on 1460,
okay.
Right. We will see that you accept your appointment is subject to in paragraph 9.2.2, obtaining the top secret security clearance from the State Security Agency, and that both parties agree that failure to obtain a top secret security clearance will result in the termination of the appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yes.
And then in the, similarly in 9.2.5,
mm-hmm.
it said, should a dismissal be confirmed by the Labor Court, the public protector shall review the appointment, which review may include summary termination of employment.
Yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And clause 10 puts you on probation for 10, and then your paragraph 14 on 1464.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
14 is
yep.
your confidentiality clause. By accepting the offer of employment, you acknowledge and agree that you will not, during the course of your employment or thereafter, except for the consent of the employer required by law,
yes.
or in the performance of your duties, use or disclose confidential information
yes.
relating to the business of the employee, including but not limited to client list, trade secrets, client details, and pricing structures. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
So slightly not appropriate in the sense that you didn't really get involved in pricing structures and client details, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you then, at the end of this, you accepted this offer, correct?
Yes.
And then at the, near the end of that period, you then concluded a fixed term contract with the public protector which for the remaining period of 1 August 2019 until her end of term, or roughly the 30 April 2023, or the end of the financial year.
Mm-hmm.
I think her term ends a few months later, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
And you were tasked to be the accounting officer and to provide support to both the public protector and the deputy public protector.
Yes, correct.
All right.
Yes.
So we're back to your affidavit at page 2721.
Page
2721. Well, you were not involved in the ongoing, let me give you a moment, paragraph 14.
Yes, I'm there.
There were various court cases going on at the time you joined the BBSA, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And there were other court cases that commenced during your tenure.
Yes.
Were you involved in any litigation decision-making or strategic decisions in respect of litigation?
No.
Were you involved in the selection of any particular attorney or advocate on any particular case?
No. But maybe that needs to be explained. What administratively, what will happen if the resources of the organizations are going to be used? I will need to be informed in the form of a memo, which I need to approve. Obviously, the rationale will have been documented in the memo that comes to me. So it's part of supporting their core business.
So there would be a memo, for instance, on the appointment of ex-attorneys. You would be informed it's for that case. There would be a route form probably from the legal advisor right up to you, and you would then sign off on it.
Yes.
Right. Now, at the time when you joined the senior manager legal services was Mr. Nemasisi. Correct?
Yes, the legal service head was Mr. Nemasisi.
And he was then resigned and he was replaced by Mr. Alfred Mshlongo.
Yes, correct.
There was a public furor that arose about your appointment to the public protector's office because of the circumstances of your dismissal from the department. Correct?
Yes. I think we went on lens when we're explaining the charges and also the prohibition matters, those was around it because some people felt that it's still not enough that I'm eligible. But I mean, there was nothing that was prohibiting me at that time to join the Public Protector South Africa.
And you had made a full disclosure of at the time of your interview, and you were appropriately qualified to take on the job.
Yes.
Right. So, you were aware at the time when you applied for the job that you would require security clearance?
Yes.
Did the advertisement indicate that you required top secret security clearance?
The advert, just like any other government department or parastatal, it refers to the requirements that you will be expected after a certain number of months to obtain the security clearance. Then later, when you are in the organization, that's when they specify which kind of security clearance they need, depending on your position. But they don't put that normally in the advert to say it will be top or normal security clearance. You will only know once you conclude the contract, they will direct you which kind of security clearance they desire.
Right. And you were informed at the time that you did the application for the security clearance, and if you look at page 2746, you subsequently, I think it's dated 31 October 2018.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I've got it.
You were informed that the security clearance investigation had been conducted and that because of your prior dismissal, in paragraph 3, the state security agency cannot at that time make a determination of the security clearance, and it was requested that the appeal process be given a chance to be finalized.
Yes.
And the results could then be forwarded to the SSA immediately, after which they would make a determination.
Yes.
So in effect, you didn't have top secret security clearance.
Yes.
Right? And until your matter in the labor court
is finalized.
Was finalized in your favor, I presume,
that would be the position that prevails.
The state security doesn't mention whether in my favor or not, but they just said, let's allow it to be concluded. Then we can reconsider
that's
the application.
Yes. Right. But the public protectors, if the Labour Court had dismissed your application and you were refused top secret security clearance, you then wouldn't have been eligible for employment at the public protector's office.
Technically it says so.
Yeah. Because it was a condition of their employment irrespective.
Yes.
Now, which meetings at the public protector's office did you attend?
We had our expo.
Sorry, Advocate Bauer and Mr. Matlang, I see your staff is upside down. Is that a sign that it's a fact of fault, it can't be fixed? So we now need to turn our heads trying to read it.
No, come to view.
Delay what is being flighted.
Okay.
You are not upside down and Mexico.
Not yet.
I force.
I love you. Can I say to you?
Getting there. Did you get it? I saw you almost giving up. So you proceed. You're about to respond, Mr. Mashango. I don't know if you still remember or you want Advocate Bauer to repeat.
If I can be assisted with the question, Chair.
Sure.
I asked you which meetings within the organization did you attend?
We had, I think there were three of them. It was an EXCO where it would be the public protector and the deputy public protector and myself. Then there will be another level where it includes executive management teams that will involve the heads of investigations, the legal, and then the chief financial officer. And then there will be a separate one that is mainly case management, which is called a dashboard.
Fine. And although these meetings dealt with case management and investigations, and so did you have any role to play?
Just repeat the question, Solomon.
In the dashboard meetings, which dealt with case management,
yes,
or which related to the various investigations, correct?
Yes. It's basically where they will give stock of where they are. They are basically not discussing the content of the investigations, but where they are and the resources that they will need for them to finalize their case. So that administratively we can ensure that there's a necessary tools of trade for them to do their work.
And so you would provide the administrative support, the finance person would be there to deal with financial and procurement matters, and the legal person would deal with legal matters.
Yes, correct.
And was there a COO at the time you were there?
There was, in my first few months, there was an acting COO, and then later we appointed Ms. Vasani Balu as the COO.
Oh, Ms. Vasani Balu.
Yes.
Right. And what was the role of the COO?
The COO basically was the head of the investigations. All the executive managers' investigations, they were reporting to her. So she will be the one making reports when we go to executive management meetings about the performance of her teams.
The executive managers are shortening. To whom they will be able to answer.
So if the executive managers fail to perform any of their responsibilities or fell short, would they then answer to the COO?
Yes.
Right. Now, I'm going to take you to some of the individual cases which emanate from charge 4. And let's start with that of Mr. Samuel. And this issue came to your attention because of a summons that had been issued against the PPSA for an amount of 350,000 emanating from an altercation that had occurred when Mr. Samuel was had his off at the Limpopo office, correct?
Yes.
Right. And at the time, the information available to you was that he had paid an admission of guilt fine ensuing from the result of the altercation.
Yes.
How did this come to your attention? And when?
I wouldn't remember the exact period, but what is happening is that in your finance reports, you will be given the status of the budget, and then you will be told about liabilities that are there that needs to be. Maybe let me put it like this. With them, just like any other government department, with biggest problems around the budgets in the PPSA. So with serious cost-containing measures, and one of the issues that we need to do, we needed to clean our books to see what are the things that are affordable, what are the things that are not affordable. Then later in the process, we pick up that we've got other liabilities that cannot be explained, but maybe I'll talk to that later, maybe just to be specific on your case. Legal services brought to our attention that we have been sued for 350,000. And then we started asking questions, but what is it for? And then it turns out that it's an old matter of 2011 involving one of our officials. Then the next thing that needed to happen at that time was for HR to give us a report about how was this matter handled previously by people who were there before us. There was no tangible documentation or information that talks to how they handled this matter. So it was basically a word of mouth to say that the matter was reported to the organization. Mr. Samuel paid the fine, and that's where it ended. But it couldn't just end like that, because in terms of the FMA, the accounting officer has a responsibility to ensure that there's no expenditure that is unexplained, or maybe a matter that there are allegations within the organizations and there are no consequence management. I had to take a decision to say, if we lose the case of the 350,000, how am I going to justify the payment of that litigation? The best thing was to subject Mr. Samuel to a disciplinary process, because there was no prior record of how the matter was handled. So it's like the people who were there were very relaxed in dealing with this matter. They could have just kept an audit trail so that whoever comes in can satisfy him or herself that this matter was dealt with. Sarah and Mr. Samuel, his punishment was done, there was consequence management, let's just see the litigation they said. So I subjected Mr. Samuel to a disciplinary process just to ensure that the person would get a proper advice about how best to deal with this matter.
Mr. Mashango, you only served at the Public Protector's Office until the end of December 2019, correct?
No.
Sorry. You resigned from your position as CEO with effect from 1 January 2020.
Yes.
The charges were only brought against Mr. Samuel after February 2020. So that was after you had left.
You maybe just check proper, because I know there were two charges against Mr. Samuel, but the first charge, which relates to the assault, was done during my time. It might not have been signed then, but it was done in my time because it came to my attention and I had to deal with it. If there's any charge that was signed thereafter, it could be another charge, but not the...
He was charged in one proceedings with everything. He wasn't charged separately with the assault and then separately. In fact, the assault was raised part and parcel with the other charges after you had left. There was no disciplinary proceedings during your tenure as CEO against him. That was, struck me, that was part of Mr. Samuel's complaint, was that the charge of assault was actually only brought against him after he had complained, after he had written the letter to the speaker, that although there was an investigation and he had been, questioned and he was raised with him by the head of HR prior thereto, the actual charge sheet only arrives after his letter to the speaker. By then you had left, right?
Sir, let me not dispute what the evidence leader is saying, but what is of importance here is that when the assault case emerges, I was there and I issued the instruction. Whether at that time the charge sheet was ready before when I was still there or I left is another thing. We can verify that maybe with the people who are still in the organization, but the matter was brought during my tenure.
No, that is so. I'm not disputing that, Mr. Mashangu. You didn't speak with Mr. Samuel at all?
No, I never spoke to Mr. Samuel.
What did Mr. Samuel report to at that stage?
At that time, I think it was Basami.
Did you speak to, was it, if he was a provincial representative, would he have answered to the EM or to the CEO?
It was Basani Ondo, but whoever was in charge was also accountable to me.
Right. Yeah. Did you speak to either one, Ondo or Basani, about it?
I could have spoken to one of the two.
Okay.
But the driver of the charges and the advice, it was from legal services.
Legal services?
Yes.
Yeah. And Mr. Samuel and Mr. Yalele will give evidence of this later, but I think you do have knowledge of it. There was nothing in his HR file indicating any misconduct on his part, correct?
So, Mary, with your permission, can this be subject for verification? Because I think I played a role there. So...
Yes. What did you say, Mr.
I was saying maybe this should be flagged as a subject for verification during break.
So you didn't check his HR file?
No, I didn't check it. But I asked for information, which Mr. Chilla didn't give me something that was convincing.
And from who did you get information?
Mr. Kumbi.
Mr. Kumbi.
Yes.
Mr. Kumbi Chialela, right?
Yeah,
I also call him Kumbi sometimes.
Yeah.
And so we'll flag that for me if he comes and gives evidence.
Sure.
But so the only information you obtained was from him?
No. Remember, it was brought, your earlier question was about how it emerged.
Yes.
It came from the legal services, because all litigations are channeled to legal services. Then after it came from the legal services, the first thing that you do as an accounting officer, you ask HR to give you a report about how this matter was handled before. But the report that came from Mr. Kumbi was not convincing. So I had to start my own disciplinary process in order to correct this.
You say the report that came from him was not convincing?
Yes.
If I take you to 3.3 of your affidavit at
2724. 2724. Okay. And then?
right? You say, to the best of your recollection, I was not apprised of any steps having previously been taken or Mr. Samuels' assault charge and conviction having been discussed and resolved with the previous PP and the EXCO as alleged by Mr. Samuels in his affidavit to the Speaker, and there was nothing put before me to suggest that the matter had already been dealt with by the relevant authorities, the PPSA.
Correct. This is where the problem started, because there was no proof that the relevant authorities took the necessary step to correct this matter.
But did you endeavor to get hold of your predecessor, who had been the CEO at that stage?
Well, because there were people in the organization, especially the HR, I rely on them. I didn't find it necessary, or it didn't come to my mind that I must call people who have left the organization for the information. All organizations keep information so that the new people that come, they easily access the information and run the organization. So there was no need for me.
But you can't discount the fact that it was dealt with internally at the time.
Well, I wouldn't argue.
And it may well be that it was recorded in the meetings or whatever EXCO existed at the time.
It could be.
But it just wasn't made available to you.
Yes.
And during your tenure, the manager of security, Mr. Baldwin Nashunzi, right, was also put on suspension relating to the leakage of documentation and information.
Yes.
That had been received from the office of the president at the time.
Yes.
And in respect of that, he was placed on suspension. Why was he put on suspension, Mr. Maslango?
Investigating activities in his office, so I felt that we should just take a step back so that we conclude the investigation.
That was the position adopted with other employees as well. I think when Ms. Mohaladi, Mr. Madiba, and was investigated, they were also placed on suspension.
Yes.
Correct? And that investigation then ensued. We'll
yes.
come back to that in a moment. Yes. Now, Mr. Nashunzi, in fact, as it turned out, that investigation on the leak, he was exonerated and he then returned to office. Correct?
Yes. Actually, Chair. Maybe we'll get to that, but I don't know how people perceive a disciplinary process. To me, a disciplinary process is not to say that you are guilty, but it's for us to satisfy ourselves that it's either we have done something wrong or not. And then if it turns out that you are innocent, and then we will come back to work. And that is the case with Mr. Nations. It was never a foregone conclusion that you will be subjected to a disciplinary process and then expect the worst. You're going to be fired after that. No, it was just for a fact-finding mission. And later it turns out that, yes, he's got his weaknesses there and there, but it doesn't warrant him to lose his job. And that's why he came back to work.
And you accept that disciplinary process you describe requires an engagement with the employee as part of that process?
Yes.
Right. There was then an issue around the same time relating to the leakage of the information that you were not in possession of the security clearance documentation.
Yes.
Right. And this too was investigated by HR together with legal services.
Yes.
right? And there was then a decision taken that an external consultant would come in to conduct the investigation, and a report would then be prepared by them.
Yes.
Correct? Now, I'm going to come to that report in a moment. I'm going to deal with it after the key adjournment. I just want to take you through the other persons, and then I'm going to come to this report.
Okay.
At the time of your employment and linked to this leakage of information, disciplinary processes in relation to Mr. Kakana also arose.
Yes.
Right? And that related to a disclosure of information pertaining inter alia to documents emanating from the Minister of Finance, as well as documentation pertaining to a trip that you were undertaking together with the public protector, correct?
Yes.
And we'll come in a moment to the details of those travel authorizations. But effectively, well, let me maybe deal with it now. It appears that in documentation in an email, the personal assistant was left to either the person, it was left to the PAs in your office and that of the public protector to sort out the travel arrangements, and that in respect of preparing that documents, which was for a international association of ombudsman meeting that was to take place in Rwanda.
Yes.
In the preparation of that documents, it had incorrectly reflected what the purpose of the trip was.
Yes.
And that document then came to find its way in the hands of Mr. Kakana through an email communication.
Yes.
Did you go on that trip?
Yes, but let's put a context here so that maybe members understand what's happening. From time to time, you will have the public protector will have international engagement. At that time, she was the president of the ombudsman in Africa. So I think we had a trip. Maybe the trip was to present the annual report here in Cape Town. Then the next trip, we're going to Rwanda on the international duty. But the PA, between the PP office and my office, one of the juniors, instead of doing her job proper, just made a talk and pace about the traveling trip. The trip was talking to an international trip. The form was talking to an international trip, but the content was something else. Whereas my PA was, this person happened to be Temuho, who's in the office, I think it's finance. And then when my PA sent the requisition, it went to Mr. Kekan. Mr. Kekane, as a colleague of my PA, instead of just saying, I think you have sent the wrong document to me, but took it upon himself to go through what is this information about, and then start making allegations to say, oh, I've intercepted information whereby Mr. Mashang was lying about the trip to Rwanda instead of Cape Town also. So that's how this transpired.
There was then the issue arising in relation to Mr. Isaac Matlawe.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And what was your first encounter with Mr. Matlawe was at the meeting when the public protector introduced you to the staff at the PBSA office, correct?
Yes.
And what transpired at that meeting?
Chair, when I was introduced to the staff, I had to, the public protector introduced me, gave a background about who I am and what are my primary responsibilities, and then later I was given the opportunity to explain my experience and how best am I going to take the organization forward. And then later it was question and answers. Mr. Matlawe was one of those people who raised their hand and asked a question, but he was very upfront. He spoke about, but we know Mr. Masangu's history. Actually, I think a week before I came, there was a City Press article that he referred to about Fari, about my appointments, and then the public protector explained the situation and the conditions upon which I was appointed and what are the expectations from the organization, especially in relation to the court case as stated in the contract, that if things doesn't go my way, the contract will be terminated immediately. He was not happy, but the matter at that time, we all accepted that, yes, there is an issue, but Mr. Masangu will have to deal with that. But that didn't impede on Mr. Masangu to perform his duties or prohibition the eligibility to be in the organization. And maybe for your information, I found out that Mr. Matlawe is the representative of the PSA, which is the union. And then later I realized that, but this comes naturally, which is work as a representative of the workers to make sure that the things are clarified. So there was never an issue in harmonicity. We just carry on and work in the organization together.
And Mr. Matlawe was subsequently also implicated in the leakage of confidential documentation.
And there's a step that you jump in, but I can confirm that. Then from time to time, Chair, the public protector will have what we call outreach problems. We'll visit the different provinces, take stock of their performance, how they are handling complaints, and the communities, some communities will attend and voice their unhappiness about the slowness of the office or how their complaints are not attended and all the stuff. In one meeting, I think it was in the first stage, and Mr. Matlawe was also present when we were meeting the management team of the First State office. Out of the blue, when we're discussing the state of the office, then he started repeating the very same things that he said when I was first introduced to the organization. And again, it has never became personal. I just accepted again to say, well, he's supposed to be vocal because maybe it's how they operate within the movements, especially the Public Servants Association. So we just let the matter go away. Now, on this one, so I can explain maybe further this one after the evidence leader has asked a follow-up question.
No, it's fine. Continue.
Okay. Oh, I can continue?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, unfortunately, Chen, on this one, number 28. And when it's linked to the investigation of the unit of Mr. Nechunzi, so when we're investigating this leakage of information, because now there were also negative publicity about the public protector giving information to the public about the complainants or people that are being investigated. I think in particular the Section 79, because they are confidential, so the information was all over the show. As an accounting officer, I had to put some measures for check what's really causing, where is the source of these leakages, and then where to bring external people And then you will know in investigation, Chair, that there might be a need that they take your computers, your gadgets, and all the stuff. Because I'm specifying this because it was all over in the news that people that are unknown put their laptops of their staff and all the stuff. But it was part of the investigation. They wouldn't have concluded the investigation if they didn't go through that process. But the gist of the matter here is that later it turns out that the sharing of unauthorized information, I won't say specifically about the president and them, but other information that come up there was between Mr. Kekane and Mr. Matlawa. So that led to the two in charge. So it's got nothing to do with what they said about the, I wouldn't want to get into the issues that they mentioned, is the correlation or the relationship between a particular investigation and them being charged. Here, I was just doing my pure administrative work, unless they want to come and prove it differently. But they've already spoken, I've listened, there's no such. The investigation on Mr. Kekane and Mr. Magrao was purely from the report that we brought an outside person to investigate the leakage of the information. So that's why it is with me. So yeah, that's it, Chair.
Mr. Matlawi, however, left the employ of the PPSA to join the bar as an advocate prior to his disciplinary proceedings running to fruition. Is that correct?
Mr. Matlawi left the employment, but to say where he went, I don't know. I didn't know.
Okay. So are you aware of a letter that had been addressed to the bar council?
No.
You didn't send such a letter?
No.
And you have no knowledge of such a letter?
No.
Then the other disciplinary matter related to Ms. Ponatshego Mogaladi, Mr. Abongile Madiba, and Ms. Lesedi Sekere was also listed in the fourth complaint. And this related to what is described as negligence in respect of the preparation of a Rule 53 record in the matter of the Financial Sector Conduct Authority involving Advocate Shiri. Correct?
Yes.
In respect of an incomplete record.
Yes.
How did this come to your attention?
Again, this one, to my recollection, is one of those matters whereby the public protector was threatened with the personal cost. Because every time, apparently, the complainant will insist that he has provided all the necessary, the requested information from him. But within the organization, the investigator in particular, I think between Zoneri Karina and Lesedi, they insisted also that they've never researched, they received the necessary documentation for them to see whether there's a case or no case. The matter tracks so long, but for some time, when we were busy cleaning the filing in all the offices, there was confession that they find the information that this complainant was busy referring to after compromising the organization. It was discussed in dashboards. You asked the question how it came to my attention. It was discussed in dashboard. We noted it. And then after they confess or finding those particular documentation, then the disciplinary process started.
But there was no disciplinary process taken against the person, the one employee who gave evidence, Ms. Karina Van Eden.
Well, let's maybe look around the hierarchy of the organization and how disciplinary processes are conducted. At my level, I will deal with a particular executive who will then deal with the lower one and then up until it gets to the real culprit. Remember, I explained how I view disciplinary processes. Mine was to deal with those that I have close proximity to in terms of the hierarchy, which was Bona, Madiba, and Besedi. For them, it was for them to prove to the organization to say this is not their making, but they were misled by their junior, and then we'll take it from there. I don't think they've done that because I left at the charge stage. So when the disciplinary hearing started, I was not there. If they presented together, I was a chairperson to say that. But as much as we were saying we don't have this information, it looks like our junior, who's the one is at fault, who never brought this to our attention. That's my understanding of how the things unraveled at that time, or how they were supposed to handle the matter.
So it wasn't the case of because there was a dereliction of duty specifically in respect of a case that it came to your attention?
But if you the manager and you fail to manage your subordinates, that can be dereliction of duty because it was upon them to ensure that they get that information and find out how did the information came from the complainant to the organization and where would have the information disappeared. But they couldn't get that information, and later it turns out that the information is lying somewhere with their junior. So it becomes their fault. So they fail to manage.
So as I understand the disciplinary hierarchy, you would deal with senior management, and senior management would have to deal with those below them,
yes,
who reported to them.
Yes.
Except in the case of Mr. Samuel, it went directly to you.
No, it didn't go directly to me. The Mr. Samuel issue came from legal services. It went to HR to provide the reports. And then remember, we said we're parking the fact of saying who charged Mr. Samuel later. So we'll come back to that. But there's nothing unique in the handling of Mr. Samuel's case and other disciplinary cases.
So and I must put this to you because both Ms. Baloyi and Mr. Matlawe is going to come and give evidence at some point, and I don't want it then to be left to the committee to say that we should have asked Mr. Mashlangu these questions. So I'm going to put to you some of the propositions that emanate from the court papers of Ms. Baloyi. She was employed for a probation as the CEO on a probationary period of 6 months, correct?
Yes.
She answered in part to you and in part to the public protector.
Yes.
Correct? And you then had what you call the review meeting at 8 months, not 6 months due to practicalities.
Yes.
And you assessed that she was not performing and her contract was not, she was, the employment was terminated.
Yes.
Correct?
Okay, yes.
And we know that that was then taken on review. It went right up to the Constitutional Court on a procedural matter. The Constitutional Court ruled in her favor, and the matter is now pending at the Labor Court. High Court?
Yes.
At the High Court. And those events occurred after you left the Public Protector's Office, correct?
Yes, yes.
Right. So what Ms. Baloyi does is, Chair, do you want to take the adjournment now? It might be a good time. Not that I'm almost, but I think it might be good to, I want to get to the report and this. But if you want to take the adjournment now, I could do this after the tea break and then we could put it on the screen.
No, but you know that after that you'll be left with 15 minutes. Or you want me to add these others? Okay.
Sure, I must give you 3 minutes.
That's fine. Thank you, Attorney Bauer. Mm-hmm. Thank you. With that request, it's 20 past 11. We will take an early tea break and we'll be back at 25 to trials, and then Rogenbauer will take from there and complete her work. We pause here. Just for tea.
Recording stopped.